I don't know if I've ever shared this with you, is that I'm visually impaired. I only have like central vision. I don't have any peripheral vision. And so I was able to apply through Vocational Rehabilitation Services for the Blind, a grant, and they helped me purchase the tower.
Wow. Tell me more about that grant for anyone who might be reading about this, who might pursue something like that.
So really, you just have to reach out to your local voc rehab. And if you are a disabled person and you're looking to try to get back out into the workforce, they will help you do that. Usually they'll help you acquire the training. They can help you acquire equipment. They can help you acquire any sort of like adaptive equipment for visual aids, lighting, magnifiers, translators, anything along those lines that will help you be back in the workforce. They're going to assist you in any way that they can. They helped me organize. I had to do the whole bit, had to, you know, write the business plan, get my projections organized, and really present it as though I were applying for, say, a business loan or an SBA loan. And they just, you know, they looked at my background, they looked at my projections, my plan, how I was putting everything together. And they helped me. They said, yes, they said, we believe in this. We believe in you. We think you've got a great idea. Here you go. Really just, it boils down to the squeaky wheel gets the oil. You have to be your own advocate, and you have to just be persistent. Reach out to your local government agency and get established. And then you just basically start the process. You'll be assigned a counselor, and that's your counselor's job, is to help you. So they'll kind of walk you through any of those gray or fuzzy areas that you're uncertain of. They'll help walk you through the process.
Tell me a little bit about what that means to be legally blind and have limited vision, but still be able to see, and how that impacts your teaching, but also your learning.
I have what's called retinitis pigmentosis, and I was diagnosed with this when I was 12 years old at, of all places, a lens crafter's, because I was starting to see a lot of floaters in my vision. Floaters are actually quite common. Many people suffer with floaters, and they're just more of an annoyance than anything else. But the optometrist discovered this, we call it RP for short. And so basically what that means is that my peripheral vision at that time was starting to decrease. So if you can think of seeing yourself in slightly larger than a 180 degree scope from slightly behind your face, and then it globes out and around, right, in a 180 degree fashion. But then we also have that from top to bottom as well, right? So it's probably a tiny bit bigger than 180, right? We can see to the sides and maybe slightly behind. So basically my scope, or that field, was narrowing. So they told me at the time that I would have till probably my 40s before I had a complete loss of vision. And that, of course, as a 12-year-old girl, was a very scary thing to hear. And then started seeing a litany of specialists in Tulsa, St. Louis. I'm originally from Joplin. So we kind of started seeing all of the area specialists. As I got older, I found kind of my person, my doctor. She's the head physician in charge of research at UCSF. Her name is Dr. Jackie Duncan. She's amazing. My other big symptom that was a problem was night blindness, significant night blindness. And at the time, they thought I would grow out of that. Well, I did not. RP basically means different things for different people. Some people lose their vision completely and they can only see through like tiny little pinholes. Other people, like myself, my vision has actually seems to have stabilized with about 20 degrees of central field vision. So 20 degrees out of 180 is not a lot, but it is enough that I can still lead a fairly functional life. I call it a visual purgatory because I'm not fully blind, but I'm also not fully sighted. It's really obvious to me, and maybe not so much to other people unless they find out about it. But like in a social setting, when I'm meeting someone for the very first time and someone were to stick out their hand for me to shake their hand, if we're standing too close, I can't see them extending their hand out to reach. And so then it looks a little socially awkward because I don't see their hand until their eyes like glance because I've not extended my own hand out. That's like the biggest like social cue that I feel like I miss a lot, even if I try to be proactive. But if I'm proactive, I'm looking down, I'm looking up, I'm looking down, I'm looking up, I'm looking down, I'm looking up to make sure that I don't miss that hand. It's just funny how you learn how to compensate. And so sometimes I'll extend my hand first, or I try to compensate and anticipate some of those things happening. One funny story was when I was still living in San Francisco and I was getting off of what they call the BART. It's their underground train system. I accidentally gave a gal, this woman, a flat tire. Do you know what that means? When you actually step on their shoe and it like pulls the shoe off their heel.
No.
So I accidentally stepped on this woman's, you know, on her heel and pulled her shoe off, and she turned around and she looked at me like I had just made the worst like social faux pas known to man, even though I was like super apologetic and I was so sorry. And anyway, it did not matter. I had really made her mad. I did start driving when I was 16 because my vision had decreased, but not bad enough to be considered quote unquote legally blind. That didn't happen until I was 18. So you're very reliant on, you know, friends and family to help you drive around. This is before Uber. This is before Lyft. This is before any of those things. Mm-hmm. So that urged me to move to a city that had an efficient public transportation system so that I could continue to live an independent life, because I am a very independent person. I don't like having to rely on others for my needs. I had my Pilates certification in San Francisco. I got my studio up and off of the ground, and then opened a second location in Sausalito. And then that all came to an end. We sold those businesses whenever my husband and I decided to start our family. And we hesitantly decided to move back to the Midwest, knowing that I was going to be stepping right back into those limitations. But what has occurred is that technology has caught up, that has made our vehicles more advanced. So now I am able to drive again. I'm able to operate a vehicle again because of lane assist and because of the technology now that exists in our vehicles that helps make up for what I lack. So I didn't drive for 16 years. It was so surreal. I was able to get back on the road again and just do very, very simple things that a lot of people take for granted. Even having the option of Ubers and Lyfts and things like that was amazing. And I had three little kids at the time, and the Uber would pull up. They had to have thought, what is this woman doing? Because I was like, I am going to my yoga class. I am going. I'd go out with my two boosters in a car seat and get all my kids strapped in and then get in. Anyway, we were a mess, but we did it.
So great. I love it. So how long now have you been back in Springfield and driving?
We moved back in June of 2011. And so that would have put me at like 32, give or take, at the time. And then I didn't start driving again till I was 36 or 37. Started to, you know, get a little bit more mobile. So that was just hugely liberating and such a relief too, because I had felt like such a burden. Our family was growing and the demands of the family were growing. Then I found out Tesla had automated cars. Well, I found out that you still had to be a licensed driver in order to own and operate one of those self-driving cars. So I just threw my hands up and I was like, okay, I get it, people. I get the signal. I've read it loud and clear. So that's whenever I took things into my own hands and I pursued getting my license again and just moving forward.
I love this sort of like, no, I'm going to make this work for me. What kind of limitations, or were there any that you had in your training because of your limited vision?
This is such a great loaded question. I don't know if it is any sort of limitation. I think it helps aid me. Two of my towers are the Cobra Towers. those Cobra towers have a horizontal bar across the middle. I have smacked my head on that thing. I cannot tell you how many times. When I'm bending over to add my weight, I just bonk my head on it, either going down or coming up. I've bonked my head on it. I cannot tell you how many times. And I know it's there. I do. I know it is there. We now know more about trauma and how it alters your DNA and what it does to your brain chemistry. Being a 12-year-old little girl and learning that I had art, I feel like that was a trauma to me. And then I didn't receive the best guidance when it comes to parents or professionals helping guide me through how to adapt and navigate this diagnosis. I kind of had to figure out a lot of that on my own. So to me, gyrotonic soothes my nervous system. It helps me from an executive function standpoint because I tend to be a manic energy. So when I do gyrotonic, it helps me feel so grounded and soothed and comforted. If you run high, it helps you kind of, it brings you back down to that homeostasis. If you run low, it'll elevate you back up. In terms of feeling limited in what I can do with it, I think it has done the exact opposite and has helped expand on so many different physical as well as mental levels.
What about your teaching? Have you had to make any major adaptations aside from not hitting the bar when you're changing weight for your clients?
So my vision is like looking through two barrels of a shotgun, right? So I can see really well what's there. So I kind of find myself scanning their body. So like if I'm concentrating on, say, what they're doing at their ankle joint, like for instance, when they're doing scissors with feet and straps, right? And if I'm trying to help them coordinate when they point and flex their feet as the legs crisscross one another, if I'm focusing on what's happening at their legs, I'm not looking and able to see what's happening up at their torso. I have to stand back almost a little bit sometimes so that I can scan their body from head to toe to see what's going on. And then I can like move in closer for the correction. I kind of have to like zoom in and zoom out, but I actually have to move my body to make that zoom in and zoom out happen.
You're right. You almost have to see what's happening from the feet all the way up into the neck and the head simultaneously to know where to correct on the pelvis and the shoulders and the hands.
You have general things that you have to say most of the time to almost every person at every session. So I can kind of count on the fact that I need to give some general cues anyway. And so even if I'm watching what's happening at their feet, I can say those other things almost like a checklist, starting from head and then just going down the body and then adapt it as needed, especially at first. You're just trying to teach them the movement sequence it by itself, like lobster tail, for instance, whenever feet are in straps, and just trying to get the internal rotation of the femur bone, pointing the toes, and then you flex at the hip, and then you unfold. And
yeah, then, like the choreography.
So that's the choreography and the moving part. But then there's also this whole other part that is, you know, stabilizing and, you know, and then don't forget to breathe.
Right. But that's such a huge testament to how well-versed you are in movement and to your background.
Well, even the most practiced people still need that cueing, because if everybody could do it perfectly, even at their most advanced level, then none of us would have jobs anymore. I just rely a little bit on like human nature needing those reminders.
So what would you say is an encouragement to somebody who maybe does have a limitation or a disability, as an encouragement that this is work you could potentially pursue if you go about it with the right perspective?
I would encourage anyone just to go for it and figure it out. The body is, and the mind for that matter, are so expansive and capable of so much from a psychosomatic standpoint, that if you're at all intrigued by this work, even just, you know, as a practitioner, and you're feeling led and driven and soothed and curious about this work, you'll evolve it to a point where it works. For instance, today I started working with a gentleman who has cerebral palsy. We're having to figure out what works for him and what doesn't, and setting baselines. he doesn't feel anything on his left side. He feels, you know, one thing in his hamstring, he feels the other thing in his quad. That's a perfect example of starting from, because we're starting from zero. He's learning all of the choreography from, you know, the ground level as a practitioner. You just have to play with it. It was really exciting to watch his eyes just light up. He's having to relearn what doctors have just told him over the years and what he thought he had to just accept as the truth. And now his mind is open to like, maybe that wasn't accurate information. Maybe I can do this. Maybe I can do that. So we're just having a great time figuring out what's available to him.
Exploration. I love that so much. And for some reason, that's what gets me the most inspired is working with folks who are like, maybe I can feel something where I thought I couldn't, or move in a way that I thought I couldn't. Is there anything else that you want to share in that same vein?
I know Julio, the inspiration for all of his work came out of a need for rehabilitation, but I don't even know that he realized how many lives he would touch and in the different ways they would be touched, because it is something that is nothing short of miraculous for some of us. So it's just with a lot of gratitude that I want to thank him.
I love that. I think, and I'll be sure and share that. I think you hit the nail on the head with this work and why it's so different, because it was literally born out of necessity. On that hillside in St. George, where he hand built himself a little shack and spent 7 years developing this work and healing his body, and then took it back and started teaching people.
Yeah. Like that's like what movies are made of.
It's really for us to share with the world that authentic representation of this work and where it comes from. Thank you so much for sharing your story and your experiences. I am just so excited to know that you're out in the world and I can send people your way.
I am very grateful and I appreciate it so much. I'll do what I can to fit people in where I can and make it work for everyone. So I appreciate it. Thank you.